it is a process of growth. And I do say this all the time, that if you don't look back at the beginning of your career as an educator with like some embarrassment, you're probably not very good right now.
Right?
Like, it really. And it's not that you weren't great then, but great educators, as we expect of our kids, should continuously grow and learn. And so do we do that as well? So that's part of that modeling, is that you see these people who are known throughout the field talking about their screw ups, talking about the mistakes that they made, and you know, wanting to go back and saying, like, if I could talk to myself, this is the advice I'd give myself.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, the lovable Brad Garner.
Wow. Thanks, Tiffany. Good to be here.
And today we are joined by a guest that we've been excited to have on the show. We originally heard at a conference, and that is George Kuros.
George shares that he is lucky to be the father of two wonderful children, Kalia and Georgia, and driven to ensure that they and every student have an amazing experience in their K-12 schooling. He also shares, I am not focused solely on preparing students for the real world, but want them to make the real world better. Although George is a leader in the area of innovation, his focus is always on the development of leadership and people and what is best for learners. His belief that meaningful change happens when you first connect to people's hearts is modeled in his writing and speaking.
Welcome, George.
Thanks for having me. What conference did you hear me at? I'm curious.
It was the Fusion Conference, the D2L Fusion Conference.
Oh, yeah. Was I speaking with my brother?
Yes, you were. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was it in Texas? I think it was in Houston area.
That's correct. Yes.
See, look, I speak at a lot of conferences, but I remember everyone's an honor to be there. So I remember them quite a bit. So
is it probably because you saw us in the audience and you remember?
Yeah, I did. I remember actually saying, oh, there's Brad and Tiffany. I hope they ask me on their podcast in a few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I actually predicted COVID then too. So I don't know if you remember that.
I think you did. Yeah. I think
yeah,
you did.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Yeah. On every show so far, well, in the last 6 months, we've been asking people for predictions on here or to forecast the future, because we are
right.
Determined to catch something, you know, that comes to fruition. So,
and for our listeners, before we leave today, George is going to make yet another prediction.
Yeah, we'll be see. Thinking. We'll see yeah.
I already know the prediction. I already know what it is, and it's right. I already know it. Just giving you the heads up. So just okay. A little clickbait kind of teaser, the yeah. Prediction yeah. I make, I 100% know it's going to be right.
Okay, good.
There you go.
This would be a good place, Mike, to put in some kind of fun music or sound effect, I feel like.
Actually, I got all that stuff, just so you know. Like, see, I got everything.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, I'm set up.
You're one-upping us, and we're just now getting started.
Wow.
Who's actually hosting this podcast? All right. We have some more fun, lighthearted questions for you. First one is, what was your favorite class in high school?
When I think of that question, I know, like, I don't know if I'm just supposed to say math and then that's it. And then we move on to the next question. Or if you want a more detailed answer. I don't know if I had a specific class that I liked more than others. I would always look at, kind of when I think about it, like one of the classes that I actually struggled with the most, I enjoyed the teacher the most as well. And it was a science class. And I know this sounds horrible. I'm still not good at science. So like, but I, you know, just so you know, I believe science is really important, but there's other people who should be doing that other than me. Like, I don't really think of a subject in particular. I really love doing fine arts. I really love my phys ed class. I think that when I look at some of the classes that I really enjoyed, like I said earlier, it's really the teachers that made that connection and actually had that opportunity. But I also look at other things that we don't necessarily grade and assess that had a huge impact on the work that I do today. So I would actually say my fine arts, I'd even think when I was, I signed a book to my grade 3 teacher, who was also my music teacher, who, you know, really helped me develop a presence on stage. And hopefully you remember me from D2L, because I seem to remember it better than you all do, because I remember where I was and you don't. So she inspired me. And, you know, but then you see schools cutting fine arts programs for like core subjects, whereas that gave me a presence and ability and confidence to be on a stage. And she actually wrote in my grade A report card, like, I still remember this, you will be on a stage one day. Like, wow, you are destined to be on a stage. Aww. Now, I don't think she thought I'd be, you know, Zooming to people, you know, or things like that. And I think, you know, that was also like probably pre-puberty. So I think she thought I was actually a pretty good singer when I was a little kid, but, you know, high school, not the same. But then I also think of my phys ed teacher and football coach. His name is Calvin Hobbs. And he actually really instilled in me this notion that you can be ready to lead, but not if you're not someone worth following. And that was something he taught me in those classes. So I can't say like, oh, I loved this subject more than others, because there were subjects that I really had a appreciation for the content, but mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily get along with the teacher, and then and vice versa. Right. And I think that's really important to me. And actually it's weird, because I've never really thought about that. Cause I ask kids that all the time, like, hey, what's your favorite subject in school? And they always have an answer. And I don't think I've ever been asked that question. And I don't actually have like, oh, this subject. Now I'm very into like social studies. I love writing. Obviously I've been blogging for 12 years. Those things really, to be honest, I didn't really develop a love for those in school. I think really connecting with people is something that I was taught outside of the classroom, which, you know, I think still resonates to this day.
Mm-hmm. I always love to hear people make tributes to teachers they've had.
I know.
And especially like what you did, George, in terms of reaching out to your third grade teacher, specifically giving her a copy of your book.
Yeah.
And kind of making her part of that story. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if you know this, and I'm going to do like a little shameless plug, but what you just mentioned is literally, I just wrote a book called Because of a Teacher. And it's exactly what you just said, Brad. It is basically, I do my own podcast, which is why I have all that stuff, right? So I started this podcast a couple of years ago, and then every year I try to think of like, hey, what's something I'm going to try new? So Because of a Teacher is based on a podcast that I started. And it was basically, I just asked three questions to my guests. I ask, who is a teacher that influenced you and why? Who is an administrator that inspired you and why? And what advice would you give to your first year teacher self, right? So I'd have these guests on, they'd answer these questions. So the book that Because of a Teacher is actually based on those three questions, but I have like 15 different people answering one of the questions. So like the first part is, you know, teacher, second part's admin, and third part is advice that you give. And it has been very well received, because it is honoring teachers of the past. And like, I'm known for innovation. We're talking, kind of joking around about forward looking, but I'm a really big advocate of like looking at some of the things that are throughout education are really important. And it's interesting, because I actually mentioned I did the podcast first. So kind of to model it to my guests, like, hey, this is kind of the format. So I actually answered the questions on the very first episode of that podcast. And I actually shared about my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Stock, who had such an incredible impact on me and really set off how I did school. My grade three teacher is my music teacher, Cindy Penrose. And then my phys ed teacher, I know you're not going to believe me, my phys ed teacher, who was also my football coach, named Calvin Hobbs, not even kidding, right? I actually wrote, I sent him a book and I wrote Calvin Hobbs, and my wife's like, who's Calvin? Is that a joke? I'm like, no, that's actually his name, right? So I actually mentioned all three of those teachers. And what was interesting is that I mentioned it, posted the video on YouTube, you know, shared it in the typical spaces. Coach Hobbs DM'd me because he watches my podcast. I had no clue. And he thanked me for that. And my kindergarten teacher from 41 years ago commented on my YouTube video, and so did my grade three teacher. So every one of them saw it. And it was just like, I actually mentioned that. It was probably one of the inspirations for writing the book, because I had no idea that they would actually see that or hear that message and me thanking them. And I just thought about like how many teachers, you know, have an incredible impact on so many kids and never hear about it and never hear it. So the whole purpose of the book is having people honor teachers, leaders from their past, but also to hopefully inspire other people to do the same, to actually go out and, you know, say like, make those contacts, make those phone calls. So I actually assigned a book to each one of those teachers. They have no clue that it's actually coming to their house. I don't know if they follow me that closely. I don't know if they know that they're mentioned in a book, but it'll be at their house very soon.
Wow.
I have a reverse version of that story. I posted on Facebook last week that 50 years ago last week, I had my first teaching job, teaching sixth grade. And one of the things I did in that Facebook post was to apologize to my students right. for all the things I didn't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's the basis of the third part, right? It was actually like, what advice would you give to your first year teacher self? And it's basically all of these educators talking about, you know, that are very revered and known across the world for the incredible work that they do, saying like, oh, I screwed this up. I did this terribly. And I think part of that was the idea of showing that it is a process of growth. And I do say this all the time, that if you don't look back at the beginning of your career as an educator with like some embarrassment, you're probably not very good right now, right? Like it really, and it's not that you weren't great then, but great educators, as we expect of our kids, should continuously grow and learn. And so do we do that as well? So that's part of that modeling, is that you see these people who are known throughout the field talking about their screw ups, talking about the mistakes that they made, and you know, wanting to go back and saying like, if I could talk to myself, this is the advice I'd give myself. So it's really powerful to do that. And I appreciate you saying that, Brad, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I look back on at the beginning of my career. And say, wow. Sorry, kids, right?
George, we're going to put you on a desert island.
Yep.
And you can only take one book with you, and it can't be because of a teacher.
Right, right.
What book would you take?
If I was to take a book, I would actually probably take The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, or... Mm-hmm. It'd be that, or How to Win Friends and Influence People. I love that book. And what is really shocking about that book, and I do own a publishing company as well. I've written a few books. And one of the things that we say to the authors is that write a book that if you look at it 30 years from now, it's still relevant. So don't like talk about a bunch of tools, really think about bigger concepts. And I read How to Win Friends and Influence People maybe like 5-6 years ago, and blown away how powerful that book is. But I think it was written in like the 1930s, and thinking like, wow, this is so relevant to a lot of the stuff that we do today. So I really enjoy the storytelling. I enjoy that impact, but really thinking about like, maybe that's the worst book to take on a desert island, because if I'm by myself, it doesn't really matter.
I know, where's the people?
Yeah. Right. So yeah, it is actually one of my favorite books, and it's one of the guidelines for, I always encourage our new authors to read that book to see like how something that has been written so many years ago is still relevant. Now there's obviously some stories in there that are like, you know, they're talking about, I don't know, horse and buggy, I don't know, something like that, right? Like they're talking about elements of that may not connect, but like the overall messaging is actually really powerful. And like I said, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I really love Covey stuff, and I think it's kind of timeless. It's a book that you read and you're like, that totally makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. I know that, but there just gives you really good reminders of some of the stuff they do. I think a lot of the questions or a lot of the habits that are there still pertain right now.
I've never thought of that before, but typically when people sit down to write a book, they want to impress their readers about how much they know about what's going on right now. And that becomes so dated so quickly.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, the thing with publishing is that it could be dated by the time it gets to the research, right? You can speed the process up as much as you want, right?
Absolutely.
And like, there's elements like Innovator's Mindset, I reference Vine, talk about Vine. And so did I say like, use Vine in the classroom? No, because it doesn't exist. But it was like, hey, like we have this ability to create, like here's some Vine stuff, right, too. And like, you might have people who don't know what that is, or like, oh, is that pre-TikTok, right? Like that kind of thing. Sharing that. So like, it is really kind of thinking about those timeless messages and big overarching that if I could go back to like Innovator's Mindset, which was written 6 years ago, I don't think there's much I would actually change, because it was with that context in mind. Is like, I don't want to write something, because a lot of people connect innovation to technology. And if you're just focused on like, here's tools, here's this stuff, by the time you're finished writing that page, the tool could be updated and then you're in trouble.
That's true.
No, I want to ask you at least one more lighthearted question, but I'm thinking we picked the wrong ones. Our notes here say favorite genre of movie, but looking at your background right now, because we're meeting over Zoom, I'm seeing a lot of music. So I'm feeling like we might have gone with the wrong subject, but you can answer both.
I'm into all type of media. So I actually have a very varied range of music. So it's weird because I'm really obviously into technology. In my office, I have a TV behind me, I have a TV in front of me, I have audio all over. And like, why am I telling you this? You can't see it. So you're listening. I guess I'm building the visual.
Immersive like experience.
Right. There's speakers in the ceiling that I can like turn on my music with my phone. But behind me, I have a record player. Years ago, I was speaking at an event in Toronto, Canada. And, you know, people give you like little gifts here. And this guy, he gave me a record. And I'm like, oh, this is really nice, but I don't have a record player. He's like, yeah. He's like, get one. I'm like, okay, well, that's quite the gift, right? Like a gift that I have to buy stuff for. All right. So then I bought it and I was like, yeah, this is really nice. So I actually never listen to any of the technology in this room. I listen to records and the sound quality is not that great. And the record player is not even that good of a record player. But every album that I have is an album that I could say I could listen to every song and love. And so like, okay. it's like behind me is like the best of George, right? Like that's kind of how I see it. Like my favorite album. So I could listen to everything from like a Kanye West album to Fleetwood Mac to a lot of Canadian bands that probably a lot of your audience might not know. REM. And I'll change the album covers because of, I do a lot of Zoom sessions and we'll actually do a lot of conversational pieces. People will actually mention the albums and then we'll talk about it. And then I'll put stuff up there to mess with people and things like that. So what's interesting is that I actually, my daughter Kalia is very comfortable using an iPad technology. And I bought her a record player and she's probably 2.5, 3 years old because she just is fascinated by the records. And it's interesting because I don't know if she knows how to like play music yet. Like she knows how to get to apps and stuff like that, but she doesn't really play music on her iPad, but she really loves playing. It's like, it's something she has control over, I feel. And it's kind of interesting to see how much she's into it. So I'll buy her little albums and we're really into musicals like La La Land, Greatest Showman, things like that. And so she loves those albums too. So it's, you know, as someone who's really known for innovation, I also am not against traditional aspects of life and kind of embracing some of the things that we embrace as kids.
Mm-hmm. In a related question, if you could live in any decade, which one would you choose?
Well, yeah, I would live in this decade because of my kids. So,
good answer. Good answer.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Look, there's a really neat theme already about, we haven't even got to that part of you yet, but that innovation, forward thinking George, but really getting to see this appreciation that you have for the past between social studies being the subject and a subject that you enjoy and the podcast that you have reflecting on teachers and the music interests. It's just really neat to see.
Yeah, actually, like I've been blogging for 12 years, right? And one of my things is that reflection is really crucial to moving forward. And I think a lot of times people always continuously try to look forward, but they don't necessarily learn from some of the things that we're doing. And like, if you look at schools, a lot of schools, and I know this is going to resonate with a ton of people listening to this podcast right now. They're always about the next three initiatives, right? Like here's the three things we're working on. And a lot of times people are like, we suck at the last three. Like, can you give us like 2 seconds? Like, can you just give us some time to kind of get into this, right? And so a lot of schools, when I talk about innovation, I'm talking about like really doing stuff better, but there's the depth of learning, but we don't have times to really become innovative in things because we don't know it that well, because we're always trying to be like, we're just embracing the latest and greatest. And we're like, yeah, but we don't know how to do any of the stuff that we tried before because you haven't given us time. So like the analogy that I always use, and some people get mad when I use this because I'm not a big jazz fan. Like I listen to jazz, but I'm not like obsessed and know the history of it too. But the thing, and when you think of jazz musicians, one of the narratives is that how they can improvise. They'll just play music on the spot, right? And that's such a thing that's connected with jazz. the reality of that is the reason jazz musicians do that is not because they just picked up a trumpet one day and just started doing whatever. It's because they know the basics inside out, that they're so good at that, that's when they can actually improvise. And so that's where a lot of the innovation in music comes from, is actually knowing your stuff inside out. But we don't give people time to actually look back, you really understand things in depth so that they can improvise, so that they can move forward. So a lot of people kind of see this as like an either or, but I see it as a progression to really going in depth with stuff. But like I said, we're focused a lot on surface level stuff, you know, being able to say to our public, hey, we're embracing this new thing, we're doing this new thing. But it's like, but are we doing anything really good with it? Or is it just a thing to brag to the public without really focusing on the depth of what we're doing? Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes plays out. If you think about people working in an organization and they're doing whatever their job might be. And I think sometimes there's a mindset of, you know, I'm not going to invest a whole lot in this because 6 months from now, we're going to be doing something completely different. So I wonder what it would be like for a leader to stand up and say, you know what, for the next year, we're just going to get better at what we're doing right now. We're going to perfect it. How do you think that would go?
Well, I know how it goes because I actually did that. And I actually did the opposite, which is the reason why. So when I first became a principal, I'm obviously really into technology, see the power of it. So every month we'd have a staff meeting. And what I would do at the staff meeting, because it was the most popular sessions at the large ISTEs and the big tech conferences, I would show like, hey, here's 10 tools. Here's 10 new tools. So like you'd have like 100 tools in an hour session and be packed, like you couldn't even get in, right? Because it's like, give me all the new stuff. Give me all the new stuff, right? So I would do this, you know, I do 10 new tools showing teachers. And then next month, 10 new tools. Next month, 10 new tools, right? By the end of that year, my teacher's like, oh my God, I can't handle this stuff. I don't even know where to start. I don't know where to go. And I actually believe that first year I had my teachers hating technology more by the end of the year than at the beginning because of the way that I led it, right? And kind of thinking about that. And we have this notion, and one of the things that really kind of shifted me was Barry Schwartz's TED Talk on the paradox of choice. And he talks about basically how we have so much choice in the world that it makes us miserable. So like basically when I was a kid, and this is an analogy, is that you like basically you go into a store and you buy the pair of jeans that was your size. And now you have like boot cut, flare, skinny, blah, 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 blah. So you're always like, did I pick the right one? So you like never are really happy with your choice. And so I said, okay, this is not working the way that we're doing this. So what we actually did is I got a group together from staff. And this is one of the initiatives that we led together as a staff. And I said, okay, what are some things that everybody on staff can utilize that we can spend time on and get really good at for the next 3 years? So we talked about WordPress for portfolios or Twitter for professional learning, Google Apps for collaboration. So we talked about those three tools that I committed to this. I said, look, we're going to focus on these for the next 3 years. And you're going to be able to know the person across the hallway is utilizing the exact same thing. So it's not going to be, you see this in high school all the time, right? History teacher loves Google Sites. This teacher loves Weebly. This teacher loves this site. This teacher. And so basically they all kind of do the same thing, but then you don't actually get really good at it because we want autonomy. And, you know, we want that. And I'm like, well, the autonomy is really not necessarily in the tool. It's what we do with it. What's the stuff that you put into it? Like, what's the different type of content you create? And I did give teachers options, said, look, if you want to go outside of these lines, you can, but you're on your own. You got to figure out on your own. I'm not necessarily paying for PD. We have to spend time on this. And this is what we come together as a staff. And my staff was so relieved by that because they knew like this wasn't just going to kind of go away. And we wanted to get it to a point where we knew this inside out and you knew the person across the hall was utilizing it too. And yeah, other things come along and they are like, oh, that's really appealing. And if you want to explore, go ahead. And I think what was really nice was I was also like speaking a little bit. I remember actually asking a staff and I kind of assumed what the answer would be. And I was totally wrong. I said, like, if I could just pick tools for you and take that decision away from you, would you rather that or would you rather have any choice? And I just thought they say, just let us choose what we think is best. And the majority of teachers are like, just pick for us. Just know, just give us support. Like, it was like that paradox of choice. There are some people not comfortable with this. We're so terrified they would pick the wrong thing, spend a bunch of time. And so like, there's a little bit, hey, if this is a bad choice, I didn't make it. It's this guy's fault, right? But then there's like they know they're going to be supported in that process. And I think that way, especially with technology use, is really, really helpful. But no one can say to me, well, you're not giving us autonomy. No, no, no. If you want to explore it, I didn't say you can't, but you're on your own for it, right? I would specifically be a person that would go outside those lines and be okay with that. But some people, they don't want to use any, they don't want to use anything because they don't even want to start. They need that support. They need that space. And it's not that they don't think technology is important, but they're so overwhelmed with it. They don't know where to begin. So then they just push it aside and say, no, it's not helpful. So I think it's really kind of that, like I said, Brad, that was something I learned from a mistake that I made of trying to give too much stuff, trying to do this, and actually saying, no, 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 this is, and like looking at this and saying, this does not work. This is what I'm like, it makes me feel good, but it's not working. So there's gotta be a different way to do this.
Hey, thanks everyone for listening in. We're gonna break right here, but we'll be back next week with George Kuros. And in the meantime, check out some of the resources on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com. And that's numerical two. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Embrace the future.
Always keep learning.